Hello and welcome to the Disney Magic Hour, episode number 33. On this week's episode, we put aside the movie hour that we were going to do in lieu of the Disney News Hour. To my left, as not always, is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
And via Skype from the other side of the country is Becky. Say hello, Becky.
Hello, Becky.
Hello, Pete. And say hello, Pogo. All right, that was Wishery by Pogo. You can find that video and more over at youtube.com/Pogo, his music at soundcloud.com/Pogo Mix, and his website is pogomix.net. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter for this show at Diz Magic Hour Pod. That's at D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. On Facebook, if you search for Disney Magic Hour, you'll find a little group. And if you head on over to iTunes and give a 5-star review, we will read it on the show, which I believe we have one to read later on at the end, right, Melissa?
Yes, we did.
Huzzah. But first things first, let me introduce our special guest this week. She was actually going to be with us last week, but we weren't able to do it just because of schedules and people getting sick and whatnot. But luckily we have her this week because, man, did a lot happen. I want to welcome the founder and CEO of MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel and our cruise buddy, Becky Mankin. Hi, Beck.
Hi again. It's so great to be on the show, and I'm so sorry that I missed last week, but the cough still lingers slightly, but I have a bone to pick with the two of you.
Great. Let's start it off. Knives out from the beginning.
I know. It's that whole, what is this about the chocolate souffle only being mediocre?
Was that you who said that?
Yeah.
That was Melissa.
That was the two of you. Are you kidding me?
I didn't say, wait, was that the word that was specifically used,
right,
mediocre?
Well, you did not use mediocre, but I'm just going with what my interpretation of the verbiage that you used.
Okay, my thing with that is I am actually not a really huge chocolate fan. I like white chocolate. I don't like dark chocolate or milk chocolate usually that much. Like, even chocolate ice cream, I don't eat. So I was happy to try it, and I thought it was good. But if you put, like, a banana bread pudding in front of me, I'll kill that dessert. That's
totally,
my thing.
Yeah. I'll totally forgive both of you on that one. But, again, still one of the best desserts out there, only because I am one of those chocolate freakazoids that can't help herself. So, again, when they say chocolate souffle, you just say yes.
It's so weird, though. It's like, I don't like chocolate in that kind of setting, but I will go and get like a little bag of truffles.
Yeah.
From Godiva, yeah. You know,
or the ganache,
on the very rare times that I like pass that thing or something like that in the mall, because I don't go to the mall a lot.
Well, that cruise was amazing. Thank you so much for joining us on it. And we did have a really good time. And again, I, like you guys had said on the episode, it was all about the people that you were traveling with. And once again, traveling with a group, that was fantastic.
Definitely. It definitely made a whole new experience and one that we want to definitely do more of. So,
yeah, that it blew the water out of just me and her going.
Yeah.
Maybe not the best use of words when you're talking about ships.
We get it.
Yeah.
Totally get it. Like I always say, because my husband, when he does get to go, he doesn't just want to travel with me. It's like, when are we going with all of our friends? Yeah. Because it's so much more fun.
It's so much more fun. So actually, let's get into. We're going to talk about cruises later on. Let's start with the thing that set everybody in the same fever that they always get every time anything towards tickets are changed. And I want to just discuss the tier system that's being introduced to the 1-day tickets. I think that's also a very important thing to kind of finger out immediately, is that this new tier system is right now at the moment exclusively affecting the 1-day tickets at the Walt Disney World Resort.
Right. And even kind of drill it down a little bit more, just for the one day ticket, which is approximately, this is a guess from stats that I've seen out there, but approximately 7 to 8% are single day tickets on a given day. So it's a small percentage overall.
That's
because most people do go to multi-day.
Yeah, because that that's the thing that always makes me kind of, you know, raise my eyebrow a little bit is, you know, I'll circle around certain, you know, boards and whatnot and see people's reactions. And these are all people who go multiple times a year, but every time the single day changes, it's so taken as like, you know, the attack on the middle class. That's, you know, what you keep hearing. You even saw the New York Post in all of their silliness, put up, you know, an article pertaining to that. But it's really not, I don't know, I don't see it as a problem, because I'm also someone who lives in New York. And for me and Melissa to just go to a Broadway play, which at the maximum is going to be 3 hours, that's going to cost me more for a good ticket than it would for a 12-hour day at Magic Kingdom.
Right. And I agree with that. There, it is the Magic Kingdom. It is Disney. And let's also kind of put a couple of other spins on this, too. It's not just Disney World, but these changes are going to impact Disneyland as well.
That's
so
right.
We're going to see it on both coasts. However, I think what happens, if you look historically, where they do make these changes on the one-day ticket, it's almost like sticking your toe in the water to see how it's going to impact. And I think what the madness behind it kind of comes along, because it could be, and it's very likely that for now it's just going to be the one-day ticket. It could possibly be that they changed it to the same structure for the multi-day as well, which then makes a complicated system even more complicated when you go to pricing. But it's not like we're not used to dynamic pricing, because everything from airlines to hotels, including Disney resorts, cruise lines. I mean, DCL prices as ships fill. So they've already tagged premium dates with premium pricing. And I mean, even movies are priced differently on midweek versus weekend. So this is nothing new in the entertainment industry or in the travel industry. There's already had that change in effect for the water parks, and even the hard ticket parties are priced differently based on demand. So I think it's just something that's inevitable. But change is never easy to embrace, especially when you're talking a few more dollars of your own hard earned money.
Yeah. And I agree with all that. I also do think that, as you said, it is the toe dipping into the water. I can't imagine the multi-day tickets won't be affected eventually. But I'm more curious. I mean, Mel, we're going to be annual pass holders, and we were going to go through, just so everyone's listening, we were going to go through all the different types of tickets, but we would lose about 20 minutes just explaining all the minutiae of all the different things. So I'm going to link you to a couple of pricing charts that I found that will break down all the different costs and all the different options, because it is becoming a wee bit overly complicated just to figure out what you need for your trip, possibly. Or if you're a Florida resident, you have multiple options, especially if you're also a DVC member. Yeah. There's so many options to choose from. Now, Melissa, do you wonder if this will have any effect, or do you want it to have any effect on the everyday crowd? I mean, is that even a possibility if it's only 7 to 8% of the people visiting every day?
Well, like we said, you know, it's probably just the one-day tickets for now, and it might, I'm sure, eventually go to the multi-day tickets. It would make sense, because now they've set up these whole, you know, different types of, you know, tiers per month or per months. So for them to then implement it with the rest of them would make sense. So yeah, I think eventually, it'll go through all of them. And yeah, it's crowd control, and I'm okay with that, because...
Do you think so? So, Becky, do you think this is a method of crowd control, or do you see this having any effect on that? Because something that everyone has noticed, and I think it's probably really the most interesting topic, is where are all these people going to go eventually? Because it's crowded all the time. January is no longer, actually, I found that really fascinating now, like even in this tiered system, the beginning of November and the beginning of December, which generally in the long scope of things was always referred to as value, those are now normal seasons.
I will tell you, this is a tornado that we're kind of stepping into here, because it's not just dynamic pricing for one-day tickets. We also have to look at the same time they elevated the price. I think this time around it was a little bit over 8% increase, where the average over the last 10 years has been 3 to 4% annually to increase the tickets before they even got into dynamic. And there has been an issue with overcrowding. And I think that this is one of the ways that they are going to attempt to control, especially during those peak times. Will it work? I don't know. Because while these increases and the changes are frustrating, people are still going. They're still showing up at the gate. And on those really high peak times like Christmas and Easter, you run the risk of being turned away at the gate because the park is too full, which of course impacts the guest experience. So they do have a problem. And then put on top of it everything that's coming down the pike in the next 2 or 3 years of things that are opening and enhancements that are going on. They need to figure out a way of controlling this. Otherwise, it's not going to be the happiest place on earth anymore, because you're going to be able to see 2 or 3 things every time you go. So maybe this is a way of them attempting to control that situation and bring the crowds down. Will it work? I don't know.
I mean, just looking at the different seasons, you know, I looked at the months that they have for this year, and I mean, up in New York, school doesn't start till September. So peak season from July 1st to 23rd, a family might say, oh, let's go for, you know, July. But now that's peak. That's more pricey. Okay, well, maybe we'll go in August now. Kids still don't have school, stuff like that. They might move, you know, 1 or 2 weeks just to get that different season. You know, it's different for when, you know, the different states have school that start in August. But, you know, for a New York family, that might be an option now.
I think they're doing that already, though. I think they're already doing that because, I mean, June and July are peak season already.
No, I know.
And I think that people are even more so. But also, those are multi-day ticket buyers. So that'll I think that's when you'll see the real, does this work towards lowering the crowds, is when it's implemented towards the multi-day ticket.
Yeah.
Right.
And then you'll really see, like, if it does, because I've actually asked a question very commonly to people who visit the parks a lot. And my question was, are you willing to pay 20% more if it meant 20% less people in the parks? Now, look, those are insane numbers. It wouldn't work out in a business sense and all that. It's just as a what would you do sort of thing, you know, with this or that. And I would say 80% of the time people are like, I will pay more if it means less population. You know, I don't mind paying more for one of the Christmas parties if maybe they cut that crowd down by 20%.
Yeah.
Right.
Because the ahead, Becky.
I was going to say, the Christmas party and the Halloween parties are perfect examples, because at one time, the capacity for those parties was much lower. And, when you are able to go into the park and feel like you're one of only 20 families around you, and you can walk on pretty much any of the major rides for a 5-minute wait at most, that had a feeling of special to it. And it made that ticket price a little bit more bearable when you already had a ticket for the day in the park. Right now you still have 40-minute rides even after the fireworks and all the kids have left, and you still have to wait in line, so it doesn't feel like it's as magical or like it is as much of a value. Interesting, just spinning off of that for a second, in doing rough math, peak dates now for the calendar, I think this is rolling out for March through December, approximately 29% of the calendar is rated peak now. About 29% is peak. 49% seems to be about regular season, and 22% of the calendar is value.
That's should be the polar opposite.
But
it's not. The thing is, they're going by accurate numbers.
Yeah. Now let me just throw another spin to this, because an argument can be made that this is actually more fair to the people who go during the non-peak times. Yeah. So this is where you're going to see the true Libra in me come out, because I can see both sides and I look at both sides. It really can be of benefit to those who go, you know what? Looking at the calendar, and I might save, you know, $50 for my entire family if we go, and if we go during these dates instead, and it thins out the crowd a little bit to save some money, there's an argument to be made that that's a benefit for everybody all around.
Yeah, I guess, that could go the flip side too. I don't know. Yeah, but then, like, as you were saying, I mean, when Star Wars Land opens, which I find it incredible, the crowds that are in Hollywood Studios as it is now. And I really think that's a large in part just due to, like, the Star Wars launch bay.
The
fact that something so simple with the Star Wars brand on it is influencing people to go and visit Hollywood Studios, the impact that when that park actually opens, it's going to be a madhouse. And I would love for them to actually, I mean, I know they won't just because it's a business. What are you going to do? But I would love it if they actually maybe lowered the maximum capacity, because that maximum capacity is going to be located in 1/3 of that park. And the rest of the park, you'll probably be able to run around in, assuming that Toy Story Land doesn't open the same exact day and all that. You're going to have all those people cramming into Star Wars land. And right. I'm really curious as to how they're going to handle that. And I'm still under the firm belief that, you know, 2018 is when we see that open.
Right. Well, interesting enough, though, Pete, in a way, we've seen that before, and they have a real world example that they can look at, which would be Harry Potter Land over at Universal Studios Orlando.
That's a great point. Yeah, that's right.
Because how they handled it was, you know, it was difficult. They had people cramming in there, and the rest of the park was kind of open, so they had to look for ways of encouraging people to go to other locations in the park when it got so slammed. So maybe Disney's kind of looking at them for examples of how to one up it.
Yeah, I don't know how you do that. I don't know if maybe you just say, like, okay, we're going to put a lot of Star Wars, you know, at least give them still, like, the theme, but we're going to put a lot of the character meet and greets maybe in different areas of the park just to try to break up the crowd, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's going to be really interesting, though. I'm very excited about it, but I also know that for all accounts, me and Mel will be living there when it opens. And I obviously want to be there opening day. So,
right,
you know, I will be bringing it upon myself, but kind of happily. I'm one of those people.
I'm going to say, please live stream that. I'll be sitting nice and comfortable watching.
Oh, no, you won't. You will be there. You know you're going to wind up being there in some fashion or another. You know you have
sadly,
to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what? Another interesting thing that I was reading about is, you know, there's two sides to the coin, because you have the people who realize this is a business. And with all the things that are coming down the pike, Disney's got to pay for it somehow. We know that it's one of the most profitable companies out there. But they're also looking at their bottom line. They're also looking at that supply versus demand. And that's kind of how the world spins, on supply versus demand in things like the entertainment and travel, like we talked about before. But then the second part of the coin, where you do get the people who are feeling like it is pricing people out, it's not fair to families, because of course it's not like back in my day here now. Yeah, the oldness, I'm going to start showing my age here. But when my family said, I want to take my kids out of school, the school said, sure, not a problem. And then I would return. I would come with my homework back and everything was good. It has changed since
that's not
I
a
was
request.
A kid.
That's not a good request anymore.
No. You cannot be as flexible at that one time. So yeah, when you're looking at all of these peak dates that are sitting here, which are school breaks and when kids are out and weekends, and it is kind of unfair to them. But then you've got the other side that's looking at the business. And I read this in one of the Orlando Sentinels, a quote from a professor who actually said, some people may get priced out, but we aren't all born with the right to go to Disneyland or Walt Disney World.
And I hate to agree with it, because it's a cold thing to agree to, but that is exactly the reality, though. It's not it's not a right, it's a privilege.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I was little going to Disney. I mean, we happened to go a lot, but
I went once as a kid.
I mean, it was like a thing. Like, we were looked at as, like, you're able to go again? Like, you can go this summer, too? Like, nobody I knew, nobody around me was going as frequently as we were.
Yeah, know? No. I mean, I go now more because it's really dependent upon my making that decision.
Yeah.
But when I was a kid, I went once. I went once in 1987, and then I did not go back again till 1999 or something like that. Like, there was a large gap between visits for me.
Wow.
And I sympathize, but I also know that I make less than the average person does income-wise on Long Island.
Wow.
But I make the decision to go. Like, that's what I do, you know? I stopped going to Ranger games because they were $300 for me and Mel to go. I stopped going to Broadway plays because it was the same thing. I stopped doing a lot of things because I made a decision of, you know what? Yeah, this is expensive. But my week there, or my 2 weeks that I save up for usually during the year, or sometimes three, now that we're DVC members, I'm okay with sacrificing that other stuff because I care about this, just that touch more.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that decision is going to be coming to a lot of people, and the price increases aren't going to stop.
Yeah. Well, we've all kind of had that in our lives. I mean, my husband and I are a great example. I'm not the type that's dripping in diamonds, nor do I have Prada shoes. We prefer to spend the income that we have, that we can play with, on experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, going to nicer hotels or taking a cruise a couple of times a year is where we decided to put our disposable money. Where other people make their choices and they prefer to have a fancier car or a larger house or other things. We all have priorities in our life as to no matter how much you make, you have to make decisions. And so some people are going to decide that a Disney resort is, or a Disney park visit is more of a priority to them than other things. Others are going to say, no, this prices me out of it because I have priorities like food and electricity. So
yeah.
I think it's a tough, cold thing to say, but it is, again, like you said, it is reality that not all of us can afford to go to a Disney park constantly because the prices do keep increasing.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. It's an unfortunate situation, but that is the situation. And another difference from when I was younger and, you know, everyone else was younger is world population changes. And there's a lot more people in the world than there were back in the mid-80s. And they have disposable income now after the recovery and whatnot. And they have all said in unison, I want to go to Disney World, and they're all there. And that's also a big thing to remember when you're comparing Disney World and Disneyland is a tourist park versus a locals park.
Correct.
And if you're a Disney World fan and you're a local, you should be counting your lucky stars that you're not seen as a locals park. Because the locals over in Disneyland, their annual pass a couple of months ago, I want to say went up to what, $1,400? Or around that area, $1,300 or $1,200, it went up by a large amount. And that is because the amount of annual pass holders that they have in Disneyland is crowding that park almost on its own. I mean, I don't know if you would have, by any chance, know the numbers on that, Becky. But I know that that was a very, very big concern. And they've had to implement the same thing. We got to raise this number to possibly lower the amount of people who are taking advantage of this.
Yeah, I don't have actual numbers on it, but I do know that that did become a problem because when California Adventure first rolled out, it was not as popular with the locals as they had hoped it would be because, I mean, you live in California. Why are you going to go see California in a park? Why are you going to pay $100 to go see a park? So they had some issues with that. So they were trying to get some people to visit, and then they made annual passes for locals very appealing with monthly payments and low prices and so forth. Well, they made some changes to the park and brought some things like Soarin' and a little thing called Cars Land, which changed the entire scope. And then all of a sudden they had to start raising the prices, putting blackout dates. Looking at the current, passport rates, the current signature that has the least amount of blackouts is $1,000 a person.
Okay, I apologize for the wrong number before.
But I will tell you, the coast to coast that I have, the Premier, it's 15. Yeah, it's like $14.99 or $14.89, something like that. So, and when we're talking, you know, these aren't adult rates. This is, you know, pricing from age 3 and up starts at that $10.49, which I'm seeing here. So, I'm sure it even goes up from there.
Man, how many visits do you think you would have to, you know, squeeze out of both parks? At least 2 weeks each?
Well, here's the difference, too, is that when you're local at Disneyland, that's where you spend your weekend. That's where your kids go to hang out. That becomes, you know, some people's babysitter. I know that there's a lot of people who will just drop the kids off and they have a great time in Disneyland on a Saturday afternoon. So people can walk to the park there from their homes.
Yeah, that's the difference also with Disney World. Is it's not exactly a thing where your kids can just walk up to the front gate of Magic Kingdom.
Exactly, you know? Exactly. So it is a whole different animal there, which they do have a population problem because they've got two parks in a very small, dense area, and they do need to manage that as well. But once you have given them great perks and hardly any blackout dates and low prices to fill the parks, now the parks are full and they start taking those away, it's a bitter pill to have things taken away from you.
Yeah. Well, you said the word animal, so why don't we segue out of this, out of the whole tiering thing that's been going on. It's going to be an ever-evolving situation, I think, over the next couple of years, especially as all the additions come up. And let's go into Animal Kingdom. Let's actually get to something maybe a little more cheery, because I know that the tiering thing is a little bit rougher situation for a lot of people. So let's talk about Animal Kingdom and everything that is coming there which me and Mel have always been huge fans of Animal Kingdom. Mm-hmm. I've always gone by the thing of this is a full day park. It's just exhausting to walk around that park all day.
Yeah.
That is one of the things. It's like, where should we go? Rocky Terrain or Rocky Terrain? It's like Rocky Terrain.
Okay.
But this park is, in my opinion, is going to now rival Epcot for my attention at night.
Definitely.
And Beck, I know that you have a quite a hefty list of all the things coming to Animal Kingdom. Do you want to talk about that?
Oh my gosh. Just, I'm with you. I am a lover of Animal Kingdom. I have always thought that it was a full day park if you took advantage of everything it had to offer. And because it was a daytime park, the animals, of course, had issues with things after dark. They didn't want fireworks over there. They didn't want to scare or upset the animals and their living behaviors. So they were very careful of how they were going to handle what happens in that park. I love just taking a slow walk around. I love being able to go up and down the trails. I love riding the safari like 29 times. I could go on and on and on. But the things that are coming, I am so excited for. And we heard just a couple of days ago that on April 22nd, which of course is Earth Day, and if my math is right, the 18th anniversary of Animal Kingdom openings, it was 98.
98, I believe. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that would be 18.
Yeah. So on that date, they're
going
to...
That's a long time. That doesn't feel right, does it? 18 years?
Don't ask. I was there at the media event, and it's just driving me crazy that I was actually there and it was 18 years ago, because that just can't be possible.
Wow, that's nuts. I'm sorry, continue.
Yeah. On that date, they're going to finally show us this wonderful thing that we've been watching being built, if you were peeking, you know, ever so carefully behind the... the curtains and the walls.
Yep.
Rivers of Light, which is going to be an amazing nighttime show with projections and lanterns and special effects and performers and music all at waterside at the Discovery River. And we have seen little snippets and storyboards and things that just got the attention of what this show is going to be about. I cannot tell you how excited I am about this show. I think it's going to rival pretty much anything else that is there. And I am a huge lover of Illuminations. I am absolutely love Wishes fireworks, but I will tell you, after I've seen what they've been doing with projections in Disneyland, knowing the things that they're going to try over here with Rivers of Light, I am so incredibly excited.
Yeah, and I love the backstory that they gave it with the lanterns, you know, how it's this whole story aspect. You know, if Disney does anything 100%, you know, and above and beyond, it's their storytelling. And just hearing the Imagineers talk about how they're going to have the storytellers and the lighting of the lanterns, you know, even before you get into the projections and the water and stuff, it feels like Illuminations, like times a bajillion when they do the whole spinny Earth thing.
Math.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, that's, you know, I'm in line also, Becky, with what you said. Like, I love Wishes. I love Illuminations. I would say Illuminations, if we take out the Star Wars thing because it's new and we're going to talk about how that's going to change soon anyway, Illuminations would probably be my favorite. But that's been around for a very long time. I'm really ready to see something totally new. Mm-hmm. And for it to be in Animal Kingdom, I think is the perfect spot. And everything that they show, the, you know, the little tease video that I just recently took a look at, I'm just so ready to sit down and watch this thing. And I believe they're going to probably have a FastPass Plus, you know, spot for this. So I think that's another good thing because as much as I love Animal Kingdom, I do kind of feel like the third FastPass, I'm like, I guess I'm going to use it here. You know, I don't really need to, but I guess I will. So this kind of gives me a very strong option now for using that third FastPass.
Yeah.
And we had, you know, we've spoken of this before in previous episodes. We were lucky enough to walk around Animal Kingdom at night very briefly, maybe for like an hour past sundown. But that hour was the most exciting hour that I've ever walked around Animal Kingdom because my brain just started going, oh, this is going to be a thing.
Yeah.
You know, and we went on on Everest in the dark. And I really hope they never fix this. In that part where you're just kind of, you know, slowly going around where you go into the big lift, there were zero lights. And it was such an eerie, cool feeling and like very exciting. And then as we were walking just up and down, you know, the walkways, you know, leading up to Everest and whatnot, these little like Christmas lights basically, you know, naked bulbs were strung across and it looked great. And they must have been testing something else also on the Tree of Life, because we saw that very blue, very Avatar blue color shining, you know, on little bulbs of light throughout the Tree of Life. And I was like, this place is a whole new, like, this is a different park. It isn't, it's just, it's a totally different experience at night, which I guess we're so used to the other parks being open at night. We're aware of that night difference, but this is so new now that I just think it's going to blow everyone away when we actually get to do that on a regular basis. I cannot wait.
It's literally a whole new world. And we've done, just like you, had those experiences with the nighttime in that park when we've done events. We've done dinner events and other events after hours over there. And it turns into a really magical, mystical place with all the lighting, the way it's all... The pathways are barely lit up and the foliage all around. And it really is a whole new world. And when you're just talking about the Tree of Life, the next thing that's going to happen every night is the park icon, the Tree of Life, is going to awaken each night with lighting and music and projections on the Tree of Life. So you might actually have seen a little bit of what they were playing with.
Yeah, I think that was what it was. It was just, we were just lucky enough to get like a little glimpse. And this was very, very early in the Avatar building stages. Yeah. But I remember stopping and saying, I know that color, you know, because it's a very distinct blue. And even though I don't think the movie story-wise is all that great, I think the world created within it is extremely cool. Mm-hmm. And that's all that matters for this, you know, for the Land of Pandora.
Yep.
The plot of the movie is not even, it's not secondary. It's tertiary. It's outside of my interest.
Yeah.
But seeing that color and realizing, oh, that's what it's going to look like. It was just like the tiniest preview of what Pandora is going to look like later.
Yeah.
And it just had that thing to it. And I really hope that they don't fix, like you were saying, it's so underlit. You know, some of the pathways are so underlit. I mean, God forbid someone, you know, falls or whatever. But I really hope that they're able to keep that mysterious ambiance, because it fits that park better than I think any park that they have.
Yeah. And I think that's why I was so excited about Pandora, because I'm with you. I'm not a big fan of the movie. I don't know who bought all those tickets that made it so incredible, but imagining that world, I want to step into that world. I want to see that world. I want to see that atmosphere. I don't care about the story, but I can't wait to walk in there and see everything illuminated.
Yeah.
So that's what's been drawing me towards the excitement of Pandora. And then you add on to the Tree of Life, and then you add on the Rivers of Light, and you can just imagine where the crowds are going to want to be in the afternoon, evening hours over there to experience this land that, like you said, a lot of people haven't had that chance to experience yet.
I'm very curious as to when Food and Wine comes around and this is now also open. Do we maybe get a little bit of a reprieve from the heavy, heavy crowds at Food and Wine?
I doubt it.
You know, no, right? It's like an octopus. It just grows an extra leg and that's it. It's going to get filled up.
Yeah. Pretty much. Well, with Food and Wine this year, they've expanded it to 62 days. It starts middle of September now and goes through November. So it's going to be the longest Food and Wine festival they've ever had.
What is it now between the two festivals? Because, you know, Flower and Garden is basically Food and Wine Mini, and then you have Food and Wine Major. It's what, 6 months now out of the year that they're having some sort of food booths and all that available?
Sure. And then throw in all of the special Run Disney things to run off all the food that you've eaten. you've got the rest of the year there. And the funny part is we haven't even touched on some of the other things at Animal Kingdom, too.
Oh, go right ahead.
And Kilimanjaro Safaris is going to transition into a nighttime adventure as well. They're bringing in some special lighting, and different animals are going to be out there on the safari. So there's going to be a whole nother way to experience Kilimanjaro that you've never been able to see before. I do know that they're bringing out hyenas, and African dogs will be added to the area, the nighttime animals. And then later on in this summer, they're opening, and I may not be saying this right, Tiffin's restaurant, which is going to be African, Asian, and South American cuisine, which will also be waterfront right there at Discovery River, and it will have patio seating as well. So you can imagine that's going to turn into that's going to turn into the place to want to have your dinner right before. If, of course, I'm assuming it's going to have a beautiful view of
rivers
of light.
Do we know if that's a signature experience?
We don't know yet. Okay. All I know is it's been set up to open for later in the summer. Don't know a date yet, but that is that's the other the final thing that they're doing for the summer under their whole Awaken Summer for that park. All four parks have something that is being rolled out as part of this Awaken Summer promotion that they're going to start out with in April.
Yeah. Wow. I think when they first announced the Tiffin's restaurant, the wording signature was in there, but I don't know if that's just their promotional thing or if that will eventually be,
if it signature. Literally meant what we mean by signature dining, a 2-point restaurant. I'm also sure that they'll make some kind of a dining experience, a la Wishes.
Oh yeah.
Like a dessert party or a full dinner experience. Maybe the way I believe they do something like that for Hollywood Studios. What am I blanking on? Water.
Fantasmic.
Yeah.
So, the one thing I've learned with Disney over the years, I've been working closely with the Disney brand for, 18, 19 years now. And if there's a revenue stream, Disney will find a way to paddle up it. So if you're going to have a beautiful show out on the river and you're going to have a restaurant that's going to be right there where you can view it, of course, there's going to be some way of being able to do a package, or there's going to be some kind of dessert party, or there's going to be some sort of added benefit. I mean, they even did it with the Star Wars fireworks, too, which has been a huge hit. So,
well, you got Darth Vader cupcakes, so you can't go wrong.
That's true.
Yeah, we did that. We actually did the dessert package for the Star Wars fireworks, and I thought it was worth every penny. Yeah. I'm also a massive Star Wars fan, so I mean, obviously that's right into my wheelhouse. But I thought for the amount that you were given, or was it made available to you to have, and for the situation and just the way that they handled the whole event, I really really liked it. I would just love to see maybe some different DJ music going on at night in that park, but that's a whole nother can of worms. So what else is coming to Animal Kingdom? Towards Animal Kingdom, actually, really quick. I know that one of me and Mel's favorite experiences ever in the Walt Disney Resort was the Wild African Trek. I wonder if there is any way to make a sunset-esque time of day tour now, maybe for that tour. And, if they're going to have a nighttime portion now of Kilimanjaro, I know the lighting for where the walkways are would be very, very difficult. They would have to set up a whole new set of things. But the idea of doing that is extremely attractive.
I could see there being some safety issues
with
that along those trails. And it would have to be really lit up. And, of course, around that time tends to be some dinner time for some or of the animals when the sun starts setting. So
even better.
That's not exactly what I meant, but if you want to try it, I can see it being – out there where you go out and have lunch. Wouldn't that be cool to have a sunset version of that out there?
Yeah, so, I would absolutely love it because I love that little area, what would you call that? The patio area where you have lunch? Yeah. The gazebo, I guess, would be one way of putting it, a very large deck.
Yeah.
But anyways, sitting out there was just phenomenal and the lunch was really, really nice. So what else do we have coming in Animal Kingdom, or is that pretty much round out that park?
That rounds out Animal Kingdom. We could move on to Epcot.
Let's go to
cover
Epcot.
Some of those. And some of these, I know that there's going to be some collective eye rolling when I cover a couple of them. But
you know what? I'm going to say it right now. Everyone who is preparing for that, get over it.
Yeah.
Not everything in Disney World is built for the 40-year-old crowd.
Correct.
It's just not. It's not. You are the person who is also there. You're not the only person there.
Exactly.
Frozen made over $1 billion, and it's an animated film starring two girls. If you don't understand the impact that would have on a company that strives towards getting that demographic, and it's still popular and kids still lose their mind. We saw a bunch of kids singing along, losing their mind on the cruise.
Yeah.
And I would have honestly thought, like, this would have probably died down a little bit by now. Nope, it hasn't.
No, and it's not going to until something else comes along that takes its place.
Yeah,
and
as much as everyone, you know, was loved Beauty and the Beast or whatever movie it was when you were a kid that you were like, I love this movie, and you just wanted to see more of it, that's what Frozen is to a whole generation of kids. So get over it.
And move on.
Maelstrom wasn't great. Yeah,
right.
Maelstrom wasn't great. It was kind of cute, but it was weird. It, you know, that is not a history ride. Don't all of a sudden, let's not act like that was history 101 of Norway. That is insane talk. So you were saying, Beck?
Yes. So let's start there. Let's start with our wonderful Frozen. Now that we've had our dissertation and we've all been collectively smacked if we even attempted to roll our eyes. All right, wait a minute. Just so I can add to that, when we were at D23 and they announced it and they showed the storyboards and they showed Adina, who was singing it, I was losing my brains. I thought that was going to be the best thing. And I had somebody sitting next to me who's also on a podcast that flips me a lot of crap. And he's like, I don't understand what you're talking about. And I went, you know what? Here's the thing. It's not that I think this is going to be fantastic. A, I love the story, but B, it's two girls who don't need a man to win.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I don't have a Mulan sisters. Attraction.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, like... So, right. So there's my dissertation. All right. So moving on. So over at Epcot, we're going to first see the Frozen Ever After boat ride, which we know is coming. It's going to be in the Norway Pavilion. Some of the neat things that they've kind of teased us with is that it's going to be, of course, celebration with all the characters of a summer snow day. But the teaser that I can't wait to see is they're saying it's going to have the most advanced animatronics to date.
Which is saying something, because the animatronics in Little Mermaid were
Ursula,
like,
in particular,
mind-blowing when we first went on it, so I can't even wait to see these.
When I saw the Ursula animatronic, I was like, oh, okay, it was worth getting on this attraction. It was like, that was worth it.
So I can't exactly imagine what this could be, noticing what they're, you know, what they've got to be doing for Star Wars and all the other lands and the things that they're doing, and they're saying that this is going to be the most advanced. That's got my interest piqued.
Yeah.
They're also going to roll out a new Anna and Elsa character meet and greet at the Royal Summer House, which is going to be more inside of a traditional styled Norwegian house. Turtle Talk with Crush in early May, we're going to start seeing the Pixar Finding Dory characters joining joining Crush.
Which is good. That attraction has been around. It's been the same for a long time. It definitely needs like some kind of, just a new, even if it's just with characters, a new coat of paint, you know, so to say.
Yeah. And just a little refreshing, a little bit something new to go see and talk to, and a little bit more of a new script, which would be nice. So it's got a little benefit. But the one I'm really excited about is Soarin' opening their third theater and doing Soarin' around the world.
I know. I can't wait for that. Do they have a date or is it just summer?
They're saying summer. I love those specific opening dates, you know? So we're all ready to go running out and booking our vacation now for the entire summer so we don't miss it.
I remember we inadvertently were there for the opening of New Fantasyland.
Yeah.
You know, we just happened to book our trip the day that they had the whole, you know, ribbon cutting. Mm-hmm. And it was maybe announced 2 weeks before we were leaving, like the hard date. So I assume this will happen the same with this. Soarin' is one of my favorite attractions. My biggest question going in is the music the same? I can't imagine it is, because they're going to have different scenes and you want to have a different kind of feel. But that music was always one of my favorite things. It's probably my favorite music in all the parks.
Yeah.
So I'm curious as to, I'm assuming they have to replace it with something. And will it do as well of a job as the first one did? And I think that's a really great challenge to put in front of them. And all I know of the new things, because I try not to deep dig too much into this stuff. I like to be surprised when this stuff comes up.
Me too.
But all I know of official that was announced is the Great Wall of China. Was there anything that I missed that you caught on that as of now, Beck?
I'm trying not to.
Okay,
I'm the same
great.
Person.
Okay.
I prefer to not know, maybe have just little things to be excited about, like on the Frozen Ever After, knowing about the advanced technology. But I want to be surprised. I want that feeling when on the first Soarin', when you go over the trees and all of a sudden there's nothing but wide open valley in front of you and you just, your breath is taken away. I don't want to see all of the pre-videos that are being shown on my small screen so I can see it on a big screen.
Yeah, yeah.
I want that wonderment and excitement and that breath to be taken out of my lungs. So I'm kind of trying not to see it until I actually get on it to experience it.
I also think it's, that's something that, you know, with the new internet age, you can see everything before you get to actually experience it. And then your, what's what I'm looking for? Your expectations become changed.
Yeah.
Or altered. Cute. And I don't think it's ever for the better.
No. And also, like, it's, the whole thing is the experience. So you being suspended in air, you feeling, you know, the movement of the ride on top of seeing things, on top of maybe smelling things. I thought that was where you were going.
Yeah.
Initially.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a good, that's a great point. Yeah. That's another great point.
So, yeah. Like,
what are the scents? Are there going to be new scents?
Yeah.
What are we
there was a time on the old ride, the first few times I rode, the first time I rode it. When you go over the beach and it starts, sunset starts happening and you hear the waves, I thought that there was going to be something that was going to throw water on me, you know, or sprinkle water on me somewhere.
That's...
So I was anticipating that and kind of waiting. It didn't happen, thankfully, but it's just that neat anticipation when you don't know what's going to happen. I think that's important. And now, and I remember how much that impacted me when I wrote it for the first time, that now writing it as much as I have, I actually like to, if you find somebody and they say it's their first time, I will watch them and watch their expressions and, you know, see them experience it for the first time, which becomes almost as fun as riding the ride.
Yeah. Like when we went with my sister and my cousins a couple trips ago, they had never been on it. And I was just so excited to get them on it. And my sister, she's like a little nervous with heights. I'm like, no, 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 don't worry about it. You're just sitting down. Don't look at the floor. Just look at the screen.
And she freaked out.
Yeah, it was good though.
She squeezed my hand so hard on the way up that thing.
But it was good.
No, it was great. Cool. My ride for that is Everest.
Yeah,
if you can get somebody on Everest without knowing what Everest does, that's so much fun. It's so much fun.
Now we see into the true soul.
Oh no, I wear that soul right out in the open for everybody.
All right.
You know, actually, going back a moment to the Frozen thing, I will say the only hesitation that I have on that is I hope it's more than just a rehash of what happened in the movie. Now, I've read that we're going to get new music and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I hope that it does incorporate the location of where it is a tiny bit. That is something that I hope for. I'm not going to hold my breath, waiting for that. Mm. But I do hope it's more than just a rehash of the movie in the way that, you know, Little Mermaid.
Yeah, which
I don't think it is.
I don't think it is either.
What I understand, it is truly a celebration of a summer snow day. Like at the very end, when they're out and it's summer and everybody's happy in the village of Arendelle, and all of a sudden Elsa turns it into a summer skating park, and everybody's having a great time. That's what I'm hoping that it turns out to be. Is you're just visiting them on a day to see what it's like, to be part of that. And of course something's got to go horribly wrong.
An oil tanker. When the oil tanker comes in and it's like, remember me? And then, you know, they're like, what is going on here? And then you have to fight an oil tanker.
Yeah, let's not do that. Hopefully not the oil tanker. But as long as I don't have to sit for a movie, I'll be fine. I will be fine. So that actually pulls it together for Epcot, which is nice. They've got a nice few things going on there.
With bigger things, I think, down the line. Very big things coming for that place.
I have a feeling that Epcot's going to be one of the next pet projects.
Absolutely. I think halfway or maybe right when we're starting to get a date or some idea for Star Wars opening, those construction crews are just going to be traveling to Epcot. That would be my hope. So,
well, the one that's already had a lot of attention, which is Magic Kingdom, has just a couple of things on its list. Obviously, the Skipper Cantina, which we've already seen, is already open and already operational. I don't know why that's on the quote unquote list, but I'm sure there's a reason somewhere. But the new castle show is Mickey's Royal Friendship Fair. And that's going to include Tiana, Rapunzel, Anna and Elsa, and the classic characters. And it's going to have some sort of friendship theme, which is going to have fireworks and dancing and you know, the typical castle show that we're used to seeing with a whole fresh outlook on it. So that's basically the only thing they have for summer coming at Magic Kingdom. And honestly, Magic Kingdom got the majority of the attention for the past few years as Fantasyland came online. So
I think leave it alone right now.
Yeah.
Yep. Leave it alone. Let that be a place where people can escape the multitude of work going on all over the place. And if anything, that's a great park for, I'm just really happy to see Tiana involved in something.
Yeah, me too.
I don't think that character in that movie gets near the respect that it deserves and the attention that it deserves just based on the music alone.
Yeah. And then even Rapunzel. You know. I mean, I know she's well-loved.
No, true.
Too,
yeah. It's not overly well. I mean, she's got a bathroom.
Yeah, it's a beautiful bathroom.
It's a beautiful bathroom. Greatest bathroom in all the parks, but she has a bathroom.
Yeah.
You know, true. It's a weird, it's kind of weird. Like,
now,
you know?
What's interesting, though, is over at Disneyland, we see a lot more of Tiana over there because there's obviously New Orleans Square.
New Orleans Square, yeah.
That is very populated with everything New Orleans over there. So it's neat. A couple times a day, you'll turn around and there's Tiana. She's wandering around, and it's a neat neat place for her, for sure.
I love that riverboat show that they had when the movie came out. Yeah. I thought that was one of the best shows they had. Yeah. And I'm not a huge stage show person. It's not really the thing that I go seeking out, but I remember I really, really enjoyed that one a lot.
Yeah.
So, and I, you know what? I'm wondering if the canteen thing also, they're trying out now same day reservations, aren't they? They're doing a test on that, I believe.
I heard that. I haven't personally experienced it. Hopefully that'll change in April. But I haven't even seen this place yet. This is so new for me.
Yeah, we just walked outside it. That was it.
Yeah. So there's a research trip right there.
Yeah, that's definitely. I'm actually going to be there alone this weekend, which is kind of weird. But I am going to be there alone in Disney World this weekend.
It's awesome. Unfortunately, I have to spend a lot of time there alone. And I will say I really do enjoy it because you will – you'll tour it differently and you'll see it differently because you'll watch people more than, you know, just dealing with what you've got on your own agenda.
Yeah, that's true.
And there's a whole new show right there. You should do that. And we should all come back and talk about doing it by yourself. Because
I mean, I'm going down there to look at a couple of apartments and we're basically going to settle on like, okay, this is where we're going. But then Saturday night, I'm not doing anything. And most of Sunday, I'm not going to be doing anything. I'm going to probably have the whole second day doing that. So I was going to do the food, the flower and garden.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'll probably make some notes. And being a New Yorker, people watching is kind of one of my natural instincts.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't remember the last time I walked around a Disney park on my onesies. I literally cannot. No, I have no idea.
Not since we've been together. Cause I was always like, I'm going to go with you.
Yeah, no, that's great. So give me some space,
whole,
woman.
Whole inside there.
All right, so a lot of good changes coming to the parks. A lot of exciting stuff. Hollywood Studios. I mean, we kind of know everything that's going on there, but
is there
something in the more immediate future that people can look at?
Oh well, I was just gonna say we have no idea still with what's going on with Toy Story Land. That has been like the most. Not talked about.
It
huge
is the
expansion.
Second child.
Yeah,
it's the second child. It is getting
it's
so
the middle
ignored.
Child. It's not even the second
okay,
child. It's
even
the middle
better.
Child.
I do think that Toy Story Land is going to be. I think it's going to be a huge surprise to people because I think a lot of people forgot it's coming.
Yeah.
So I think that'll be like one aspect of it being a big surprise. I do think that it will replace the Christmas party, quote unquote, that the lights did, that the Osborne lights did. I think that Toy Story that setting. Is a perfect setting to have a Christmas thing because it's based in the real world.
Yeah.
So the holiday exists in that world, one would imagine. And there's a bunch of toys everywhere. I mean, what else? How easy can this be? So I think that we're going to get a second very large Christmas party to maybe take the weight off of the Magic Kingdom Christmas party, and this will give everyone a secondary option. At least I think so. Because you can't do it in Star Wars. So, but I think it fits absolutely perfectly if you did an event, a ticketed event, that mainly took place in Toy Story Land. Becky, what are your thoughts towards that? Is that just crazy talk, or you think that's maybe a possibility?
I cannot confirm nor deny Christmas things that may be happening over at Hollywood Studios.
Every time I talk to you and Lou, I hit that wall eventually.
Yeah, there's a couple that I just can't I can't comment on that.
All right, well, you know what? I just like the fact that I brought it up and you can't comment on it. It makes me feel pretty good about that guess. So
doesn't mean you're right.
Doesn't mean I'm wrong. So do you want to talk about the really big news? The really big news, pretty much everything has been like a lot of big news, but there was some relatively two very large news things announced today on the shareholders meeting by Bob Iger. And this can bring us back around to where we started, was discussing the cruise ships.
Yeah. And again, going back to supply and demand, cruise ships and Disney Cruise Lines have been amazingly popular. They are priced according to supply and demand, and they do have some premiums. They do set the pricing higher during they already have dynamic pricing because they start out with prices with a premium setting on any time that kids are out of school and any holidays. So it's automatically already bumped up on those dates. And then the rest of the year, they just go as quick as they can. And the one biggest tip I tell everybody, if you even thinking of doing a Disney cruise, the moment that they release, grab it. Just put your money down. It's not that much. It's fully refundable as long as you're not in a concierge. Concierge, you can move the date, but it's fully refundable. Grab the date, lock in the early booking savings, because as the ship fills, the prices increase. So people have learned that over time. And now we're into a situation where pretty much all the ships are full. And when they're not sailing full, they have how many thousands of cast members that can go on cast member rates. They also have travel agent rates out there for TAs to go and learn about the product. They also have Florida resident rates. So between all of that, they can pretty much fill any berth that's left over. Over time, it's been very difficult to find availability within, you know, half a year. So we have always been sitting here crossing our fingers and going, please give us more inventory. Please give us more space. Because for me to do my job and get my clients on the ships that they want to go on, we need the space to do it. So we've known that shipbuilding right now and cruising is immensely popular across the board. And as a matter of fact, there was one cruise line that wanted to build a brand new ship so badly to meet its demand that they actually had to go and purchase a shipbuilder to get on their schedule.
Oh, wow.
That's how crazy it is. So to build a ship, and that's people were asking me, even on our cruise, is there going to be new ships? I said, there has to be eventually. But it's going to be at least 5 to 6 years, because that's right now what the shipbuilders have on their inventory. They have ships waiting in line to be built, and they're 5 years out. Yeah. This news came out today that Disney's going to build 2 new ships. One coming out in 2021 and the other in 2023 that are just slightly bigger than the Fantasy and the Dream. And when I mean slightly, very slightly. So, for example, the Dream and the Fantasy are what they call 130,000 in gross tonnage. And these ships are slated to be 135. So they're not going to be much bigger. I think they're going to be along the same vein, but it's going to be 5 years till we see one.
I'm happy that they're not going to be much bigger. I remember we did the Dream, and now we've done the Fantasy. And I think the Fantasy is a fine size. And if it was a tad larger, it might seem, I don't know. There's a certain intimacy that I felt when we were on those ships. Like, yeah, everything was in reach. I never had to be like, oh, God, we got to go over there. Like, that never happened. We never felt like we had to take a trek to get anywhere.
Yeah, no, even like, I'll go back to the room for a second was, you know,
literally a second. Yeah, it was like a couple of minutes and we were back. We also had a good location, which was highly in thanks, actually, to Sharla Manglass, who helped me book that through MEI Travel.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the quick plug.
Bizarre.
And that is one thing I will say, especially if you're looking to grab one of these. I already have about 52 people on the list that are ready to book for 2021. So it's really good to establish a great relationship with a travel professional who specializes in these areas, because you can get on the list. And if you're ready for it, we'll grab it when it comes out. But you know, we're probably looking at being able to book these around 2019. So 3 years or so before we can book these out, unless they do something crazy and decide to, you know, book them out beforehand. But I totally doubt we'll see that. But it is exciting news for us, because seeing two more ships going from first 2 to 4 and now 4 to 6, it just shows that cruising is a very popular way to travel, and the Disney brand, of course, is a great model for it.
Do you have any inkling as to what you think would be their port of call and, you know, where they would be going?
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a real tough one. And I'll tell you that when you do get into that size of ship, you are limited in where you can go.
Oh, okay.
A good example is the Magic and the Wonder can go to Key West, but the Dream and the Fantasy cannot because they're too big for that area.
I was unaware of that.
Yep. And then there's even larger ships like Royal Caribbean has the Oasis of the Seas, which it's one of the biggest ships afloat, if not the, and its sister ship. And it's coming to Port Canaveral in the fall, which we're really excited about because it's a lower price point and families that are priced out of Disney can still go to Disney World and do a cruise as well. But they had to get the port ready. They had to dredge. They had to prepare because that is such a large drafted ship. So when you're talking about ships of this size, and another thing too is that the Magic and the Wonder can go through the Panama Canal.
Right.
The larger ones cannot until the total expansion, which they've been working on of expanding the Panama Canal, is completely done and ready. But so that's one of the reasons why they're so careful to manage the size of the ships, because they want to make sure they know where they go. There's been some speculation, or I should say some blue sky. I've heard a lot of blue sky wishes. And
the moon.
Yeah. One of the big ones, though, and it makes total sense because right now the cruise industry is laser focused on Asia. And there are tons of ships that are heading over to China and being extremely successful because that is the next market to tap into.
Yeah.
So imagine having a ship that can go from LA to Hawaii to China, do China up and down for a little bit. And oh, by the way, you can go to Shanghai or, tap into the parks over there. Again, this is completely blue sky. There's nothing solid behind it, but watching what other cruise lines are doing right now, it would be incredible if they could figure out a way to do it.
Well, I mean, the Magic made its way over, you know, across the Atlantic. So maybe at one point, the Pacific.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Well, it would be more possible if they would take the larger ships and keep them in Europe, but take the smaller ships maybe and send one over there, which would be incredibly cool to have that part of the world open up to the Disney fan.
And this definitely, I would assume, opens the door for the Wonder to get a refurb.
Oh, yes. I hope so.
Yeah, right? That would be...
She's about due. I think she is due. She's next one up. She had a great refurb when they were getting ready for her first Alaska season. And they did wonderful things with her, especially in Cove Cafe, where they opened up the second floor so that you could really take in the nature and have your coffee, too, and be warm all at the same time when they did that rehab. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do next. I know that a concierge lounge went in on the Magic in the same place that the Cove Cafe went on the Wonder. So it'll be interesting to see what they do.
I'm sorry. But it's a two-story Cove. I've never been on the Wonder, obviously.
Yeah.
And Alaska is one of, I would say cruise-wise, it is number one on our list right now.
Yeah.
Alaska would be.
No.
and so they have a second floor, so you could observe outside the boat, like looking onto the wilderness.
Yeah, the ship. It's called a ship.
Oh, wow.
By the way, it's called a ship.
Wait, what did I say?
Boat. Boat is a little thing that you get into and row.
A dinghy? Is it a dinghy? Can I just call it that? So you can actually. Oh wow, that's really cool. Because I like Cove Cafe a lot. That was one of my favorite places just to sit and relax.
Yeah. So if you imagine, I know that you were in the Cove down here, where it's in the adult area, so you can't really see the ocean really well from where you're sitting. But on the Wonder, it is surrounded in glass, and they have little tables, so it's on the very top deck. So you can just see, it's like you're sitting on deck 11 or deck 12, just inside of glass, so you're protected and warm.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It is just an awesome place to grab your adult beverage and or hot cocoa and sit there and just watch the world go by. And on an inside passage where it is so close to the shoreline as you're going up and back. You could just sit and watch bald eagles from some of the locations on a clear day.
That's awesome.
Alaska is my favorite cruise itinerary of the 100-some-odd cruises that I've taken in my life. I will keep returning to Alaska.
Yeah, that's, we haven't done it yet. We've only done two cruises, but Alaska is at the top of that list.
Yeah, the next long cruise that we do, I want to do Alaska.
We want to do Disneyland first. We've never been to Disneyland, but we're going to do Disneyland in a little bit more of an affordable way, I think, than we originally wanted. Just because money, and also because the Alaska thing, we don't want that to be 4 years away. We want that to be a bunch closer than that, or something like that.
Well, you never know when some groups may be returning there, because it was one of the favorite. It is an all-time favorite, and I have a feeling that there's going to be a couple of group opportunities going that direction, and not too long, and the not so distant future. It really is amazing, and a lot of people just drive me crazy because they do the, but I don't want to go to Alaska because I don't want to have to wear big heavy clothes and it's going to snow on me, and it's like whoa. Dude, seriously, it's on an inside passage round trip, Seattle or Vancouver, you're only going up to Juneau. You're not going up to Alaska. You're in Alaska, but it's on the same plane as Canada. So in the summer, your daytime highs could be anywhere from 70 to 75 on a nice clear day. So it's not like you're there in 40 degrees and freezing. But then again, the wonderful thing about the wilderness is the weather can turn and you can have wind chills and rain, and if you're not used to it, it can feel like it's 40, but
I want it to snow.
It will not snow.
No.
Like summer.
Unless you get on, you will have to get on a helicopter and fly out to a glacier, or bring Elsa with you to make
that. I would love to do that, actually. If we're gonna, that's another cruise where we're gonna have to, that's gonna be an excursionary cruise. You know, that is one where when we go somewhere, we're getting off the boat.
Yeah.
Oh, every single place you have to. And each location has a different specialty. Like one, you have to go see whales. One, you have to go have a salmon bake. Another one, you have to go to the helicopter to go to a glacier. So, and again, another reason why you use a travel professional to help you with those things.
Yeah, let's talk about that after the show, actually. Let's just talk about it. Lou can't hear it. He can't hear it. He won't say anything. Okay, we got a couple more things, and I want to thank, number one, I just want to say really, really quick, thank you so much for coming on the show, and we're already at like an hour and 15. I appreciate it. We won't keep you for much longer. So let's just, what else do we want to talk about? Actually, next month, just really quick, I'm not doing anything. They're doing the groundbreaking for Star Wars Land.
Right, which coincides with the DVD and movie being released.
Yeah.
April 1st digitally, April 5th on DVD combo pack.
Yeah, Blu-ray. Yeah. No 3D, to my knowledge. I don't think they said a 3D version. But don't worry, 3D wasn't any good. It was all post-conversion and really not shot that way. So
if
you enjoyed it, great. But it wasn't something that struck me at all to see in 3D, ever again. I did it once and I'll never
do it
again.
The only ones I'll definitely buy on 3D are the Pixar movies.
Yeah. Those are usually also, they have a little more, I don't know, it just fits that medium a touch better.
That's
just
why.
Because of the popping and the color colors, and whatnot. Yeah. It really kind of works that way. And actually, if you guys are, if any Star Wars fans are out there, and Becky, I was referring to this before we went on air. I know a lot of people are clamoring for the original trilogy, the untouched original trilogy, the one that you saw in a theater or maybe when you first bought it on VHS. Before all the changes and the quote-unquote special editions, in heavy quotes, came to those films, there was something that happened, because the internet's crazy. There is a thing called Team Negative that went and off of an original 35mm print of Star Wars, untouched and all that, they cleaned it up as much as they could. And they restored some of the color that was lost, because the print was a little bit faded and all that. They went through and they digitally fixed a lot of the things that time and age has just done to a print of film, which is just going to happen naturally unless you have a moisture sealed vault and all that. And they put it out on the internet. They have since kind of scuttled the website and went a wee bit underground. They said they did not do that from anything from Disney telling them we're going to sue you or anything. It was just that they accomplished what they wanted to accomplish, and that was it. So if you're interested in maybe taking a look or searching some, you know, some sites and whatnot, if you want to look for Team Negative Star Wars, you'll probably find something that you really, really dig. I recently got to watch it, and man, the original is so much of a nicer experience than the special editions. You got Yahan shoots first. You have the lack of CGI characters floating into the frame for absolutely no reason. There's no Jabba sequence, which looks awkward and silly. It's just the movie that you remember. With that, look, Disney's going to put it out eventually. There's too much money on the table. You know, as Becky was saying before, there is no, you know, how'd you put it? Revenue stream?
Oh, yeah, if there's a revenue stream, they will find a way to paddle up it.
Yeah, and and A New Hope is also still that the film rights of that are still owned by Fox. So, because that was the one that was not done exclusively with Disney, with Lucas's film. You know, he used his money earned from A New Hope to finance the other ones. So, you know, Fox and Disney, not exactly known for not wanting to make money on things. So you're going to get it eventually. But, you know, if you got a little inkling and you want to check out the version that you may remember when you were a kid and whatnot, I would seek out Team Negative Star Wars, and you'll have quite a bit of fun with that. Beck, did we miss anything from your list? I feel like we did, but
Something that was on your list, though, because you asked me about this before, and I said, "Oh my gosh, you need to tell me about this." I have no idea.
Oh my god, you're totally right. Yes, absolutely. There have been announced. There's going to be changes coming to FastPass Plus. Now, I'm going to put all this under rumor. There are changes coming, but I keep getting mixed on whether or not the changes were officially announced, or there were changes announced and then people filled in the blanks. So I want to just put this all under rumor, but when you hear the changes, they're just common sense measures, honestly. This is what's going to happen eventually. You are going to, soon, or whenever Disney decides to lower the hammer on this one, to choose your additional fourth FastPass from your phone. Doing it through the My Disney Experience app and not having to go visit a kiosk, which I find silly. Like, I, you know, this is something that I've been waiting to come around because I don't like the idea of having to go to a kiosk. That was the whole reason I wanted to get rid of FastPass. The original FastPass was having to run to kiosk. So this is going to be something that's coming in. There is another idea that you are going to be able to book that extra FastPass in a different park. I would put that under such a grain of salt.
Yeah, I didn't hear that one.
Yeah, I only read that a couple of places, and that I kind of feel was more the fans just like, oh, and this is going to happen too, and then the internet just made it so.
No, the internet doesn't do anything like that.
Crazy, right? And also, I think they're going, the other idea is that they're finally going to be implementing the Story Maker interactions and stuff for attractions, and that will include maybe your name being said by certain characters just because they're able to pick it up off of your Magic Band. Say, when you go see Magician Mickey in Town Square, without having to speak to the handler, or I should say the pre-handler, about where you're from and this and that, and how that information somehow gets to Mickey himself. Or actually, I think she just says it right now. She'll be like, oh, they're from New York.
Yeah.
And then he'll respond. They may be able to get your, they'll take your name and stuff off of your FastPass.
Your Magic Band.
And, I'm sorry, off your Magic Band. And there's even some parts of screens at the end of A Small World that will now say goodbye and your name.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah, I don't know about that one, though. I was kind of curious, because that seems...
Well, we actually saw that in use at in demo way back when they... before Magic Bands were actually the thing they are now, at D23, where they had a lamp on display. And you wave something past, and they were showing us that the lamp then could speak to you because it would read it off the RFID. So,
oh, that's great.
I have a feeling that what we've seen of Magic Bands and what they can do now is a very small percentage of the possibilities of what they want them to do.
Yeah.
Because they do want to make it a much more personal experience for any of those encounters in the parks. And the only way to do that is to be able to get access to information. So that information on your Magic Band could be transmitted anywhere that they want it to give that info to be able to have that personal experience. So I have a feeling you're not too far off there. It's just when, because the last thing you want is for that technology to trip up and your little girl who's been looking forward to, you know, seeing her name somewhere and it says, "Goodnight, Bob," it probably isn't going to go over so well. So that's the type of technology that could be either a great guest experience or really bring it down a notch. So I think they want to get it right.
And I think that's also to answer if anyone's ever said, like, why does this stuff take so long? It's because it goes through months, sometimes years of testing. Because mm-hmm. Disney is a 24/7 operation. And if something doesn't work to the best that it can work, right? There's always going to be hiccups. You live in a technologically driven world. If you expect things to work 100% right out of the gate, I think that you're not really looking at things realistically.
Yeah.
You know, even nowadays, if you can get a video game to come out that actually runs correctly, you've got to be thankful. And it's just because things are much more complicated now. There's so many intertwining systems and trying to just have everything has to be perfect or the system says, nope, that line doesn't work. What's this? And then you have, you know, "Goodnight, Bob." So that's why these things take so long. And I agree with you. I think FastPass and the whole idea of the Magic Bands, we are still in such the infant stage that I know it's nuts to think this way because you want things now and that's the society we live in. Like, it's got to work. It's got to work now or it sucks. Like, that's always what happens. It's either this is amazing or this is terrible. There's very little ground in between now with people. Mm-hmm. And in like a decade, I think you'll have a better idea of what my magic and, you know, the Magic Bands and everything is. Because I also see that RFID technology in the same way that maybe Diagon Alley uses it for Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. I'm picking up a lightsaber somewhere. You know, like I am picking up a lightsaber and I'm doing something. You know, it might even be a small thing that occurs when you're on that new Millennium Falcon ride. You don't know yet. Like, yeah. But I think that it's going to become a very vital part. And I also think that it probably won't be around your wrist the whole time also. I think that there will be eventually other ways.
Ring.
Yeah, like a magic necklace or whatever, you know?
A magical ring.
And
one ring.
Breathes fire. And, you know, I think that there will be different methods once they get a handle on the whole system working. But you've got to get that system working in the way that Disney is. Again, 24/7, worldwide. It's not easy. It is not easy. It's a long haul. So you
got to when you've got the variables of technology
and nuts.
You've got the internet ready to tear you down the first time you have a flaw.
Yeah. I remember. I won't even go into it. There's a website I remember that was launching basically for the country and it didn't work right out of the gate. And everyone was like, see, this is never going to work. It's like, do you ever go on the internet? Like, nothing works perfectly when it first, like this is normal. You know, if this didn't happen, I'd be terrified because I would assume sorcery was used. So
well, I'll tell you to sum it all up is that we just read off an amazing amount of things that are coming just this summer. Just imagine what we have coming to us over the next 3 to 5 years and all the things we have to talk about and get excited about and to yell about and to not be happy with and to be ecstatic about. And it's an exciting time to be a Disney fan.
I think it absolutely is. I think we're moving down there at just the right moment because, well, you know what? Because Star Wars.
Yeah.
Because that's my number one.
All about Star Wars.
It is. It's my number one. It's my number one thing that it's – I never thought it would happen, and now it's happening. So, Becky, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show with us tonight. And I'm so happy the way it worked out. I think this was the right episode. It was a better episode for us to sit and talk about this stuff than anything that I could have come up with.
Well, I'm so glad that you asked, and I'm so glad to be here. And I hope to have a chance to do it again so we can talk and yammer about the next great thing that they announced that are going to throw us all into a tizzy.
Yeah, absolutely. And now where can everyone find you and find MEI Travel and Mouse Fan on the internet and whatnot?
Well, let me explain this really quick because I get this all the time. MEI Travel is my company. And if you go to meitravel.com, you have a jump off point where you get three options. We have three divisions. MEI Travel deals with all cruise lines and all destinations around the globe. So if you want to go for 7 nights to a Sandals in the Caribbean, we can do that. If you want to go on a celebrity cruise, we can do that. So you go to the MEI Travel division. Or if you're looking for Disney, we have mousefantravel.com. That is also found as a jump-off point off of MEI Travel. And we also have Universal Fan Travel, too. We have a bunch of people who specialize in Universal Studios. So we can pretty much cover all of your needs, all of your travel needs. And we're a no-fee service. So you pay as much as you would if you book direct, but usually less because we can find those little hidden gems. And when there's an offer that comes out that makes your rate lower, we proactively apply savings without you even having to call, and there's no fees associated. So a lot of services available through us. Give us a shot. We're happy to help you with any of your vacation needs.
And I will have links to MEI Travel and MouseFan. And you know what? I actually did not know that there was a Universal page. I will find that. I'll find that and I'll add that onto the page as well.
Yeah, do that. Because... And then and my personal Twitter account is Becky Mankin, BECIMAHNKEN. And I am usually the person that is tweeting out and sending out information when new offers come out or when new announcements are done. So follow me there.
And just because it's awesome, who is the artist again who does your your logo, you know, your character, your superhero logo?
Yeah, I've got a personal blog that's adventureswithbecky.com. And Chris Iliopoulos is my partner in crime. He is a freelancer over with Marvel and is one of the people that do the Ordinary People Do Extraordinary Things over with Brad Meltzer. He is an incredible artist. You can find him on a podcast, the Mickey Miles and More podcast, where they talk about everything from Disney to Disney running to all of that wonderful stuff, including Marvel, because, of course, he's so into that. And it was so amazing the other day. He hand-penciled a thing of BB-8 with a teaser about something. Uh-oh. I can't wait to talk to him about that to find out what's going on.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I'm trying to think of... All right. Okay. Interesting. Because I read the Marvel Star Wars comics, and they're really good. They're better than I think they're better than they have a right to be in a lot of ways, and that's great. I'm happy that it's being taken so well because it's nice to have that as the little gaps to plug in the stories, and it's been a lot of fun.
He's been a good buddy of mine for a while, and he does a bunch of little super me's because he draws superheroes. And I'm like, can you make me a super me? And so he shows up with these wonderful little super me drawings. And you know, it's good to have friends, and they can actually draw better than me because I do stick figures.
Oh, God, I'm terrible. I wouldn't even hand in my picture at the animation thing on the cruise.
Hey, dude. You know what I'm going to do? I grabbed a blank one from the cruise and I'm going to send it to him and I'm going to have him do a ringer for me.
That is so not fair. It's insane.
It's a good idea, though.
It's a good idea, though. Yeah, I'm actually just pissed I didn't think of it myself. So, all right. Thank you again so much for coming on with us tonight. And you know what? We're just going to we're going to read our review that we got this week. Well, I'm going to read partial of it anyways. Shellick 2. Says, I really enjoy listening to this podcast. The information is interesting and the cast is fun. What I really like is they do not throw pixie dust on all things Disney. It's nice to hear both the good and the bad, and they come up with your own conclusions. And then she throws in her own little not so much pixie dust. Not a fan of Pogo, evidently, the music that we have every week. But sorry, I love Pogo. So that is what it shall be. So, but thank you so
much.
Yeah, we also can't afford anything else. He's just awesome. And I'm a big fan of his. We're friends. So, I want to thank you so much, though, for taking the time to go and make that review. It really helps more than I can explain because we are a small show. This is literally happening in a table in a basement. And for you guys to actually take time out of your day, head over to iTunes and bring those reviews is just another way that we might get pushed up a little higher on that totem and more people will find us. And the more people who find us, the more we can do with the show. And the more we can do with the show, the more fun I believe it's going to be to listen to. I also do think that when me and Mel move down to the area, that's going to introduce a whole new section of this show. And it's really, really exciting. So changes to come soon. I hope everyone is with us as we continue along. And our website, lastgenpodcast.com, we actually just passed our 1-year anniversary. If you're a fan of the Film Basement, and I know some of you twisted listeners are, you guys had our 1-year anniversary show just a couple of weeks ago. And I just want to say again, the support that we get for these two shows is really cool. It's crazy, actually. You know, we're learning every week that, you know, someone from somewhere that I've never heard of, you know, is watching a movie or something just because we talked about it and they didn't know of it before. And it's great. And, you know, people are enjoying the Disney show and getting all the news from us and enjoying the movie stuff and, you know, going back and visiting those films that maybe you haven't watched in a long time. And it's just a lot of fun. Yeah. So I just want to say thank you to everyone who's been with us so far for the first year overall. And I think we're, at 6 months or so on this show?
About, yeah.
Right around there. So we're still in our infant ages, you know, absolute infant ages. So I just want to thank everyone. But you can find us at lastgenpodcast.com on Twitter for this show. You can find us at Diz Magic Hour Pod. And if you want to follow the Film Basement one, that is at lastgenpodcast. On Facebook, you can find us if you search for Disney Magic Hour. You can just add yourself to the group. We got a really good group brewing over there.
Yeah.
A lot of people having a lot of fun.
Good interactions.
A lot of good interactions lately. It's been so much fun. And of course, if you can head over to iTunes, 5-star review. That is one of the best ways to help us and to share the podcast on your page. Becky Mankin, once again, thank you so much for coming on to our show this week. And I really can't thank you enough.
Loved being here. Thanks again, and I look forward to coming back.
All right. Till next time, say goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Melissa.
Say goodnight, Becky.
Goodnight, Becky.
Goodnight, Pete. Say goodnight, Pogo.